All right, as we discussed previously, the topic that we'll start today will be Acts chapter 16. Having just finished the questions for Acts chapter 15 last week. Acts chapter 16. And, of course, as probably most of you know, these slides that are used in the presentation, as Mickey has put down at the bottom, that they're prepared by Joe Price. He's put them together, and then we add or subtract at our leisure as we feel necessary. So we'll go through these and look at this, and he's titled this the Macedonian Call. Now, if I were to label it, I'm not sure I'd label it that, but it does occur here, and Acts 16, I think, is a little more comprehensive than just the Macedonian Call. So, but that's probably the thing that leads us to most of the discussion about things in the gospel that are going on. The trip down in Asia Minor, as it were, is rather brief compared to the things that happen in Macedonia and Achaia. So, but we won't get into that until the next chapter. As we look at this, we're looking now at, and I meant to relabel this, Paul's second preaching journey. Was Paul the only one on this journey? No. Who else for sure do we know came with him to begin with? Silas. All right. So Silas was with him. Silas was what?
He was a prophet from Jerusalem.
All right. A prophet from Jerusalem. And he had been sent by the Jerusalem church up to Antioch to verify to the church in Antioch of Syria that the letter that Paul and Barnabas were bringing was actually what the apostles and elders and church in Jerusalem had to say about the problem that they were having with the Judaizing teachers. I would just call this the second preaching journey and leave it at that myself. But as we look at this, we understand that this second journey now is going to be a lot longer than the first journey. We see that it goes from the 41st verse of chapter 15, which is just the last couple of verses of chapter 15, all the way through chapter 18 and verse 22. As we think about this, we understand that the journey started in Antioch, essentially very shortly after they delivered the letter from Jerusalem. Now, as we see here, the message from the Jerusalem church caused a lot of joy and encouragement to the brethren in Antioch. Why was that? Why did it cause joy and encouragement? Randy?
It cleared up the dispute that they had about circumcision and whether it was necessary to be saved.
Okay. So people had been coming, telling others that they were from the church in Jerusalem, and saying that in verse 5, for example, of chapter 14, it's needful to circumcise them and to charge them to keep the law of Moses. And so this teaching was going on in Syria and Cilicia and apparently in other areas around that were teaching people that, in essence, they had to become a Jew in order to become a Christian. Now, and that was the big problem between what was going on between Antioch of Syria and Jerusalem. And so that's why the problem needed to be cleared up, and so indeed they did. The elders and apostles and the church in Jerusalem sent this letter back to the church in Antioch and told them that they didn't send these people out, and that wasn't true. That's why the letter was a cause for joy and encouragement, because as they also say, or was talked about, not binding. Verse 10 of chapter 15, now therefore, as Peter is speaking, he says, now therefore, why make ye trial of God, that ye should put a yoke upon the neck of the disciples, which neither our fathers nor we were able to bear? But we believe that we shall be saved through the grace of the Lord Jesus in like manner as they. The encouragement that they received was that there was not some binding here that was going on that nobody had ever heard of before, and now all of a sudden, in order to become a Christian, you had to be something else, in this instance, a Jew. They showed very decisively and clearly that that was the case. Now, as things continued along in Antioch then, after this letter was delivered and there was a discussion there, there was teaching. Now, what two messengers came up directly from the church in Jerusalem?
Jews
Judas and Silas. And as it was mentioned, they were both what?
They were prophets, and they were chief.
They were leading men, or chief men, as it says in the church in Jerusalem. Right there in verse 22 of Acts chapter 15, it says, Judas called Barsabbas and Silas, chief men among the brethren. And it mentions also that they were prophets. These people continued to teach in Antioch. And so they encouraged the people in Antioch. I think we can see by what has occurred in other places that they didn't just preach to the people that were in the church in Antioch, but they preached all around in that area. So we see that the gospel was spread, as it were, far and near, but the teaching continued in Antioch. And then, of course, at the end of that chapter, we see that... Yes, David?
You could finish your sentence. It's interesting to note that back in Acts chapter 11, when Barnabas went to Antioch, that he saw the grace of God. He saw that those in Antioch doing the teachings of our Lord and Savior.
All right.
That's what he meant when he saw the grace of God. He saw them actually doing those teachings. So when they heard this, they must have been pretty confused of, hey, what's going on? Are we doing something not according to what the Lord instructed us? And now we can see why they were really encouraged and had great joy when they heard that all along that they had been doing what was right.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. That when Barnabas came up in Acts chapter 11, he was definitely from the church in Jerusalem, even though he was natively from Cyprus. He was from the church in Jerusalem. He went up there. He saw the grace of God. He encouraged them. He didn't say anything about having to become a Jew in order to become a Christian. And then now, all of a sudden later, other people are coming up from Jerusalem, supposedly, and teaching them that they need to become Jews in order to become Christians. And that, apparently, that if you haven't become a Jew first, you need to fix that before you can continue being a Christian. And that just wasn't the case. But that's a good point. Barnabas is no stranger to the church in Antioch. And he'd been sent there by the church in Jerusalem, I think. He stayed there this entire time because then he went to get Saul in Tarsus and brought him back, and they taught the church, it says, for about a year. And then I think this other stuff started to crop up. That would have been very confusing to receive what appeared to be mixed messages from the church in Jerusalem. And it was imperative that they clear this up, and so they did. And so, of course, we had the dispute over taking John Mark. What was the problem with John Mark as far as Paul was concerned? He didn't trust him to finish the work, because it appears, anyway, from the text that John Mark, as it were, abandoned them in Pamphylia to go back home to Jerusalem. At least Paul took it that way. But apparently Barnabas, who was John Mark's what?
Cousin,
did not see it that way. So they had a bit of a falling out there. Did this last forever? No. We can see that Barnabas is spoken of again. We can see also that John Mark is spoken of by Paul and specifically requested that he come to him in Rome. I believe it is. Let's keep that in mind, that they had a disagreement here about the way the things ought to happen. So Silas and Paul then go through Syria and Cilicia, strengthening the churches. But what did Barnabas and John Mark do? They what?
Same thing in different places.
Same thing in different places. Which different place do we know that they went to? Cyprus. All right. So we know that they went to Cyprus. So Barnabas and John Mark took off, went to Cyprus, where Barnabas had been before, as far as preaching along with Paul goes. And then Paul took Silas, and they went up through Syria and Cilicia, which we'll look at a map here in just a second. And they preached in a different... What was the purpose, though, the stated purpose, before this split happened, what was the purpose of them leaving Antioch at this particular time?
They wanted to go back and strengthen and visit the churches that they
had. All right.
Just worked with.
So... Right. They wanted to strengthen and visit the churches that they had gone through on the first preaching tour, where they went through Cyprus, and then up through Pamphylia, up to Antioch of Pisidia, down to Iconium, Lystra, and Derbe, and then back around through the same thing and back to Antioch. They had agreed that it would be a good idea to go there, and then when this dispute came up, Barnabas and John Mark went to Cyprus, and then Silas and Paul, I knew there was another guy there, Silas and Paul went up through Syria and Cilicia via land. Okay, I put a map in here, which Joe didn't have. It may not be very clear because I really enlarged it to get it to this size, but you can see the trace outlines a bit anyway. So we have of course Israel down here, but where we're leaving from right here up here is Syria. It turns out when we think of Syria, what city do we normally think of? Damascus. Damascus appears to be like the capital. And when you look at maps of Bible times, so many times when they talk about Syria, they're talking about this area right here. And I'm going, well, but it goes all the way up here. So when we look at this hook in the Mediterranean right here, this end of the Mediterranean right here, Antioch of Syria is right about in this area. And so Syria was a pretty good chunk of land. And then when we go up here and go to where Tarsus is, we can see that that's the Roman province of Cilicia. As a matter of fact, I think when we see that when Paul is sent from Jerusalem back to Tarsus, it mentions specifically that that's Tarsus in Cilicia. Bruce, do you have your hand up?
Yeah, it's just something that just continued in my mind. I guess we go through it all the time. Paul told the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians, chapter 1, that we're supposed to speak that there should be no divisions among you, that we should, that everything should be done, we should be all off the street. Verse 10 says, I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that we all speak the same thing, and that there be no divisions among you, but that we be perfectly joined together in the same mind and in the same judgment. Paul continued, says the same thing over and over again, and this perfectly, shows us that there should be no division among you, which we see the Jews, who want to separate them, continually. Hey, circumcision? For what reason?
Right. Yeah.
And we see that Paul continually says that he preaches the same thing in every church.
And that's a big thing, that we understand that there are to be no divisions, that we're all to be united in the same gospel, and that we act like that toward one another. These people were having a tough time doing that. Now, why do you suppose that they were having a tough time doing that? I mean, why were people coming from Jerusalem saying you need to be a Jew first? Why would they do that?
Well, when you see in Acts chapter 2, how those who were Jews all of a sudden changed over to become Christians. Well, what was happening on that day, the day of Pentecost? Well, you see, all the Jews coming and giving everything that they have to the Jews, and now that they're leaving, where are they going to be getting their money from? Where are they going to be getting, all of their power? Now they're losing all their power. Now they're losing all their prestige. Now they're losing all their money, and they see that now that their religion and everything is fallen to Christianity.
Into Juan.
Well, the other thing, they've been God's chosen people for quite some time, that they've had a lot of blessings from them, God, so it's kind of hard to turn away. As even today, this day and age, to see something that you're used to or something that comforts you, and then to go to something else, it's kind of hard. I mean, I think for anybody, human nature is going to go back to what they believe. And so, that form was also a way for them, of course, telling who was Jew and who wasn't. So that could be something that also comes into play, that you want to be able to tell, maybe, who a Christian was versus who wasn't.
And I think both of the points are quite valid. We see the discussion in the Gospels about the fact that their political power and their prestige and their other things might be taken away from them as far as the rulers of the Jews go. But the fact of the matter is that Judaism was not a new religion. It had not been we just established 2 or 3 months ago, and you know, got a lot of converts, and then somebody else came along and said, "Oh well, we don't believe in that anymore." No, these people have been raised for thousands of years in their traditions of Judaism, and had lived, as far as they were concerned, uprightly according to this all the time. Though that's not necessarily the case, Bruce.
Yeah, that's true. But what they need to realize is they still have the problems, but the benefits really aren't the human part. The benefits are spiritual and they're godly. And so what they've done is they've left God, and they're forgetting about God what they're putting themselves for.
Yeah, and ultimately, was not the Messiah the end product, you might say, of the Jewish religion?
Yeah.
That's what it was. It's just that the Messiah didn't come the way that they thought it would come, that he would come. That salvation in the name of the Messiah did not come through the law of Moses. It came through another law that replaced the law of Moses, you might say. And so it's tough for them. So there's a certain amount, I suppose, of understanding that we can have to show that these people are having a hard time. So we see the times that they got together. We look at Acts chapter 10 and the conversion of Cornelius and his household, and then the discussion that Peter had to have with the apostles and elders at the church in Jerusalem in Acts chapter 11. He had to explain himself. And so when he did, it appears that they understood that this was from God. But now we get to Acts chapter, whatever chapter we're in, 16. 14, 15, and 16. And we see that the explaining that Peter did to the church in Jerusalem back in Acts chapter 11 apparently it didn't take for everybody. There may have been new people. There may have been people that simply kept silent because they didn't want to talk anymore and said, those guys, you'd never teach them. We understand that it's hard for them. And we've discussed this time after time when we look at the institution of the New Testament church, the fact that it was tough for people who had been Jews all their lives and whose mom and dad and grandparents, back innumerable generations, had been Jews. It was hard for them to do this. And so, you know, I jumped all over the Pharisees last week about the fact that these people in verse 5 were calling themselves of the sect of the Pharisees. They should have given that up and become the Christians that they ought to be. They're not Pharisees anymore. Well, that was hard for them. And these are the people from whom this false teaching came about, is the people that said, you need to abide by the strict letter of the law. Jenny?
Well, one thing to keep in mind in regards to the Pharisees and other such things like that is that being a Jew was both a religion and a nationality. It wasn't just their religious practices, it was their national identity as well. So, being a Pharisee, part of a ruling body in their nation, is not necessarily something that they need to give up when they become a Christian. They've changed their religion, but that doesn't mean they've changed their nationality.
Right. They're still Israelites, but they're no longer Jews. It was tough for them to understand that. There's a lot of heritage, a lot of rich heritage through here. I mean, when we look at the history of the United States, it's a speck compared to what we read about in the history of the Jews. The United States has been around as a nation, anyway, for only a couple of hundred, less than 250 years, right? 240-something? That's nothing in the timelines that we read about in the Old Testament. It's just amazing the amount of historical data and the amount of history these people had. And these books that we're reading are the same ones that they read their entire lives. Been around, since the beginning, as it were. Jonathan?
Well, something to bear in mind, too. People are the same today.
Yes.
You see the exact same thing with your... The best example I can think of are your various ethnic versions of the Orthodox Church.
Mm-hmm.
The Greek Orthodox, the Albanian Orthodox, the whatever. But you see the same thing there, and in many cases, those people who are part of those organizations, it's less of a religion and more of the cultural association. I know I've seen many times where they will have a Greek festival and it's put on the grounds of whatever the local Greek Orthodox church is.
Right.
When they're baptized, they adopt Greek names.
That too?
Oh, okay. So when they're baptized, they adopt Greek names. Okay.
So, point being, we see the same thing today.
Sure. Okay.
So there's nothing new under the sun.
We've heard that before somewhere. Lynn?
I just consider it sometimes, too. I think about one of the benefits of sending a child to preschool before they go to kindergarten, especially if they've been at home without other children as much, and the soul... their whole world and their mom's world or their caregiver's world was just one world. And if they go, now they have to share. And it's like the Jews now are going to have to share with the Gentiles. And that was a big thing for them, especially people that they thought were unworthy. And that was a whole lot, I think, for them to wrap their minds around.
Right. Because like Juan said, they've been the chosen people. And now... essentially, they're no longer the chosen people. They can continue to remain the chosen people by doing what God tells them to do. But, yes, there's... And so, we have to try and understand somewhat. And the ethnic slant to many religions today is interesting to look at. The fact that you've got so many ethnically related sects of the same church, for example. As Jonathan said, the Greek Orthodox, for example, and the Albanian, and so on. There's a number of different Orthodox churches that seem to have nationalistic tendencies as opposed to some sort of religious teaching. So there was a problem in the church, obviously. We discussed that throughout chapters 14 and 15. And supposedly, it's now been cleared up. Now, if we go to Galatians, the second chapter, and assume that this is a different time, has it been cleared up? As a matter of fact, it hasn't been cleared up with who? Peter. And, you know, you think that would be the big one, because what did Peter do in Acts chapter 11? He told them, it's okay for the Gentiles. God said, it's okay. What did Peter see on the rooftop of Cornelius, or of Simon's house? The vision that told him what? Don't call anything that God's made unclean. And so when he came to the assembled people at Caesarea in the household of Cornelius, he realized what this vision meant. And he told the church in Jerusalem that. Yet when we get to Galatians chapter 2, what did he do? He became a what? The Greek word used is hypocrite, right? So, interesting to know. So it was tough even for Peter, whom we consider to be at least after his denial of Jesus. After that, it appears that Peter was a pretty strong person as a Christian. Yet, the peer pressure was something that was apparently too much for him, at least in the case of Galatians chapter 2. It's just something that we need to understand. We don't need to justify it. We don't need to excuse it. But we need to understand the fact that it's tough for these people to do that. And so the people that supposedly had come from Jerusalem were trying to evangelize, as it were, in their own way, but that didn't work out. It was just the wrong way to do things. And apparently they had to make some really concerted efforts. As we go through chapter 16, we'll find that they continue to do what with this letter?
Circulate it
to the other churches. And so it's entirely possible that they may have been affected by this teaching also, or it could have been peremptory on Paul and Silas's part, just to say, there you go. This is what we've already discussed with the churches in Antioch and Jerusalem, and this is what the apostles and elders and church in Jerusalem said about the whole matter. Hopefully that's what it was, is what it was, a peremptory strike on their part, just to make sure that the people that they were going through in the other places were well aware that this was a problem and that it could be handled. Do we do that today? I mean, if we hear that there's been a problem with marriage, divorce, and remarriage in some other congregation or some other state or something like that, should we not worry about it just because it's not here? Or should we first talk about it so that we understand what the problem they're having is and how we can avoid that by using the gospel? All of the above, huh? I don't think we should ignore it. So there's a number of teachings that we see around that we need to speak about. We need to study and make sure that we understand what they're all about, so that should that kind of thing come here, that we already have an answer. What are we supposed to be prepared with? We're supposed to be prepared with the gospel at all times, ready to give an answer to those that would question our faith.
Ask us for the reason, the hope that's in us.
For the hope that's in us, that's right. Yes. All right. Have I meandered enough off? we have, of course, a general outline of the second preaching journey here, and then back up to Antioch. And as you can tell, since the first journey was from here, to there, and then back again, you can tell that this is a much longer journey. I looked it up, and somebody had put down that this was about 3,000 miles. That's a long way. I got my Google Earth out, which won't come up on this machine for something, so I won't bore you with it. But I got my Google Earth out, and I just did straight lines from here to here to here to here to. I came up with 2,300 miles just by doing straight lines and not going to exactly where things were. People feel, of course, when Paul left from Berea, that he may have taken the ship down here and to get to Athens and had gone around, and so that would have been a little bit more of a journey than if he had come by land, though it may have been a difficult journey by land. So there's a few things you can toss up and say, well, you know, he went by boat here, he went by land there, and whether it's quicker or shorter or whatever. But that's a long trip. We need to remember that most of it was probably what? On foot, right? Maybe they had donkeys, I don't know. But there's no indication of how they got to where they're going. And so it's a long trip. I also read somewhere else, and I'm not sure that I know whether this is valid or not, but said that they started here in the autumn of AD 49 and ended up back here in the autumn of AD 52. 10, 11, 12. Of course, according to my calculation, that's 3 years. Now, it sounds possible that this would have taken only that long. But if you think about when the Jews of captivity came down from Babylon, and you read in, I think it's in Nehemiah, where it says what the time was. How long did it take them to get from Babylon down to Israel? Anybody remember? 5 months. Now, they had the women and the children and the animals and whatever with them. They weren't traveling by high-speed rail or anything like that, but it did take them 5 months to to go this insignificant distance from wherever it is up here all the way down to Israel. Quite a ways.
Babylon's on the wall.
Babylon's on the wall?
Really? Just about on the wall.
Yeah.
Right where that dot is. It took 5 months to do that. And so if we look at an equivalent distance from the wall over here to Israel, knowing that they could not travel directly across the desert, they had to go via the Fertile Crescent, otherwise they would perish in the desert. Much like what happened if you walked to Edwards Air Force Base from here, for example. And so it took them 5 months to do that. And if we look at an equivalent journey here, we realize that not only are they just walking or going to these places, what are they doing in addition?
Preaching
the gospel. So they're not just going to this town and saying, "Hey folks, how's it going? I want to get a falafel and we're going on to the next town." No. They spent their time talking to people, preaching the gospel. So what may have taken them 5 months to get down here may take Paul and Silas and company 10 months to do, or even longer. But it was not only was it a fur piece, it was a long time. I always get confused about Ephesus, because for some reason I had the impression that they went to Ephesus on this journey on the way up. And they did not. That was on the third journey, right, where they stayed a year and a half in Ephesus. And so it's always seemed like some of the things that happened in Ephesus seemed strange to me. And then I thought, oh, no, that's because I'm on the wrong journey. So they come to Ephesus on the way back home. And so we'll get to that. When we look at Acts chapter 16, how much of this journey are we looking at? Right. So about half of it, right? So we end up here with who? The Philippian jailer and Lydia. All right? So both of them are, one of them is Philippi, but there's Berea. Maybe that's Philippi there. It makes no difference. So when we look at Acts chapter 16, we're going from Antioch all the way over to Philippi. And of course, right from here to there, that's the Macedonian call. What happened in Troas?
Paul had a dream telling him to go.
Right. Saw a man of Macedonia saying, "Come help us." And I always remember this up here because there's Philippi, this is Macedonia. I keep thinking of Philip of Macedon, who was whose dad? Alexander's dad, Alexander the Great. Philip of Macedon was from here, and of course Alexander was from everywhere because he took over the entire world. Yeah, Randy.
I know we haven't really read through the chapter yet, but they were led to Troas by being told where not to go.
Yes, they were.
And that's in verses 6 and 7. Having been forbidden by the Holy Spirit to speak with Asia, so they weren't permitted to go north.
Down here.
Where they were.
Right.
Or south. It's in Mysia.
Right.
And they came to Mysia and were trying to go into Bithynia.
Right.
So they couldn't go north or south.
Yes. They were somewhat constrained.
So
yes.
They kept going the direction they were going, and that's when they got Troas and then all had a vision.
Right. So they went through Mysia, wanting to go to Bithynia or wanting to go down to Asia, and they were forbidden to do so, and then they go over to Troas. And that's where they get, and that's essentially the toward the end of this chapter. And about halfway through their preaching journey. It is, however, not, I don't believe, halfway through the time. Because when they got over here to Corinth, how long did they stay?
A
year and a half. Yeah. So they were there for a while also. A lot of things going on here. And that's what Joe was showing here, is that they've gone from Antioch to Troas, essentially in this chapter, and then they head on to Philippi. And that would be where this chapter ends. Now, we've got an interesting statement here. Go where the gospel is wanted. And I suppose you can take that two ways. That, oh, they said they don't want the gospel, so I'm not going to go there. Well, that wasn't the case. But the fact of the matter is that where they went, they went and they found people who were interested in listening anyway. So even in Athens, when we get down there, we'll find that Paul and the people that were with him, or Paul anyway, found people that were interested in talking about affairs religious. And so he would talk with them in Athens, for example, about the gospel, about this unknown God, right? And so when we say go where the gospel is wanted, what we're wanting to say here is that we're preaching the gospel to people who are willing to listen. That's simply it. If we somebody turn to Romans 15th chapter and verses 20 through 22. You have that, Bruce?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And thus I aspire to preach the gospel, not with Christ, but also named. So I would not build another man's foundation. But as it is written, they who have news of him that shall see. And they who have not heard shall understand.
Alright, so in verse 20, he says that he makes it his aim so to preach the gospel not where Christ was already named. That's not to say that he didn't do what they had set forth to do, which was to go strengthen the churches of Syria and Cilicia and continue on and talk to the churches in Derbe and Lystra and Iconium and Antioch of Pisidia. It simply means that he wants to make sure that the gospel is getting as much exposure as possible, right? And so if somebody else has already preached the gospel there, he doesn't need to do it again. He may go there and strengthen the churches or find out how they're doing, but he doesn't need to spend years with them. He needs to go and preach the gospel in other places. So that, because it's not his purpose to build, as he says, upon another man's foundation. And I think that when he quotes in verse 21, it's Romans. I don't have my cross references. When he quotes in verse 21, he says, as it is written, they shall see to whom no tidings of him came, and they who have not heard shall understand. We see that it is his purpose then to bring the gospel to those people who don't have it, who didn't hear it already. It's important that the gospel be spread. So he's going where the gospel is wanted, means that he's taking it to new places. And then he's also making sure that the people that he goes with are faithful men. Now, this is not to say that Barnabas and John Mark were unfaithful men. What we want to say here, or show here, is what we're looking at is that the people that he went with were faithful men. So if we look at the reference here to chapter 15 and verse 40, we see that this is where it talks about the fact that Paul chose Silas. They went forth, it says, being commended by the brethren to the grace of the Lord. And so that's what they did. And so these were faithful people that they were going with, that he was going with, and they were commended by the church in Antioch to do so. And then in verses 1 and 2 here of chapter 16, what do we see here? Verses 1 and 2 of chapter 16, we see a pretty important thing happen. What is that? Specifically, I think it's in verse 2. Well, both verses 1 and 2. What significant thing happened here?
He picks up
Timothy. Is Timothy someone we'll be concerned about past this time? Yes. How many letters do we have in the New Testament that were written specifically to Timothy? We have two of those, right? And Timothy is mentioned quite a bit. Paul considers Timothy essentially to be his son in the faith. We see here that as we read through verses 1 and 2, it says he came to Derbe and to Lystra. Now, he's been there before, has he not? What happened in Lystra? He was stoned and left for dead. They took him out of the city and that's where they buried him, right? Ah, yes. He got up. They supposed he was dead, dragged him out of the city, and he got up and brushed himself off, went back into the city of all things, talked to the disciples a bit, and went to Derbe. I guess he must have got his clothes dirty when they stoned him. But anyway, he got up. But we see here that he went back now, and he's gone to to Derbe and then to Lystra. And then it talks about the fact that there was a certain disciple there whose name was Timothy. A disciple. Have we heard about Timothy before? No. This is the first time. But we see that he is a disciple. And what are we looking at here in 2 Timothy, the first chapter in verse 5? What's that? Randy, can you get to that? 2 Timothy 1:5, yes, sorry. Yeah, Randy's getting to it.
2 Timothy 1:5, for I am mindful of the sincere faith within you, which first dwelt in your grandmother Lois and your mother Eunice, and I am sure that it is in you as well.
All right. So both his mother and his grandmother appear to have been disciples, because it talks about the fact that his mother was a Jew that believed, right? Dad was Greek. And the fact of the matter is that apparently in the first preaching journey, these people had been converted. Now, given that he's been, and I think if we go, is it 3:15 that talks about how long? Yes. You jump over to 3:15 also, Randy. 3:15.
And that from childhood you have known the sacred writings which are able to give you the wisdom that leads to salvation through faith which is in Christ Jesus.
All right. So from a child, was Timothy raised in a Christian family, as it were? Raised in a Jewish family, right. With knowledge of the scriptures. So his grandma and his mom taught him the scriptures. Dad probably didn't have a whole lot to do with teaching him the scriptures, given that he was a Gentile. And as a matter of fact, somebody in one of the commentaries I read indicated that the word used in the Greek here is some imperfect something that seemed to indicate that his dad is dead. Okay. You'd have to know Greek in order to know that, I guess. But anyway, the fact of the matter is that Timothy was raised up to be a person trusting in the scriptures. We know that his mother was in the middle of verse 1, the son of a Jewess that believed. And so we know that his mother was a disciple also. But it calls Timothy in this same verse a disciple. So the only conclusion we can draw is that at some time in Paul's and Barnabas's journey through this area, his mom, what's her name? Lois? Yeah. Mother Eunice, okay. That his mother and him both heard the gospel and became Christians. Where do we suppose that Timothy is from? Derbe or Lystra? That, of course, is just supposition. However, the grammar seems to indicate that he was from Lystra because it says he came to Derbe and to Lystra, etc., 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 and the same were well reported by the brethren that were at Lystra and Iconium. So in the two verses, Lystra is the only common term used. The distance between Lystra and Derbe is much greater than the distance between Lystra and Iconium. And so we see that Timothy was well known by the brethren that were at Iconium and at Lystra, but there's no mention that he was known by the brethren at Derbe specifically. So we suppose that he came from Lystra. Does it make a difference? I think not. So he's from Derbe or Lystra, or Iconium or Antioch or somewhere, but he's from around Lystra. And so at this place, we realize that Paul is not only taking a faithful man with him from Antioch of Syria, but now he's picking up another faithful man from perhaps Lystra to continue preaching the gospel throughout this area. All right, we will start up again right toward the beginning of chapter 16, discussing a little further about Timothy and so on. Randy, did you have a...
I was going to point out that Lystra was where Paul was stoned. We don't know, but we can speculate that Timothy might have seen that.
Timothy might have seen the stoning, that's right. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.